Does your computer repair business website need work? Go to techsitebuilder.com and get the official Podnuts method for making a site that works. Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 260. Podnuts Daily is a show about computer repair. We have computer repair technicians come on the show, or just people in the computer repair business world come on the show, and they talk about what they're doing. They give tips and tricks and advice and techniques, and it works out really well for all concerned. So joining us today is a guest that we are familiar with. It is the amazing Latfi, who is our reballer. He has been on an episode of Podnuts. He's also been on a Podnuts daily or two. And also, I think the Great Tech Debate, weren't you, Latfi?
Yeah. We've done the last tech debate. Yeah, come on.
And so, Latfi, how you doing?
Hi, everybody. Hi, Podnuts, Steve. I'm great. Thank you for inviting me down here. And thank you for listening. Things doing well, and since we last talked on the Podnuts website, the business is doing great, booming every week. And as a matter of fact, I'm now seeking a bigger place to working. It's been daunting. You'd expect that we're now in the economical crisis and everything, and everybody's renting their shops or renting their workspace. And I just found it really hard to find a good place that is cheap, you know, because can't afford a huge place right now. And I've had ups and downs, but finally, tomorrow, I'm going to decide. I've got two places now, and finally, I'm going to decide which one I'm going to take, either that or either that, and then pay them the deposit, get the contract, and then I can finally move in. Because right now, where am I? Is there's no space anymore. We've been doing a lot of repairs, for the reballing. I'm talking just about the reballing business we do, and we gotta move out. We gotta get a whole like industrial unit, like a warehouse unit, to do just that, because we don't need the high street anymore. All I need is the because most of my repairs are over the courier. If you didn't know, we 90% in fact of my business is by courier, by people boxing their laptops or technicians boxing their motherboards, sending them to me for repairs, and then I send them back to them. So the need for a high street is no longer needed.
High street,
yeah, the high street, the where the customer. Whether your shop is basically, we call it a high street, but because your shop is right on the high street of every town, or where there's a lot of people walking by. So right. we no longer need people to walking customers. If that's
yeah, and that probably cuts down on your rent a lot too, not having to be on high street,
does,
as you said.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. I mean, you see, when I was a repair technician, like doing all kinds of repairs like everybody else, I at the start, I did start with owning a whole shop. I've had my own shop, and at first it was with my cousin. We both sort of partnered to get a shop, and we had it running for about a year, and then he wanted to get his own, and I ended up being by myself running the whole shop, and I just didn't like it. In the end, it just you end up not having a life. You're stuck in that shop the whole day, and when you need to get out and do something, you always need to find someone else to like back you up. I just didn't like the whole idea of running your own shop. I think you really need someone else to run it with you or along with you, or you need to, you know, employ someone else. And at the time, I couldn't afford to employ someone else, nor I could find or trust someone else to fix the computers,
right?
Because I didn't think, you know, I don't know, I just didn't have the confidence to let someone else fix the computers. You know, as a technician, I want to fix the computer. I want to make sure it's 100% fine and 100% right. So
if you're wearing all the hats, it can get like really stressful.
Yeah.
But it is nice to have one person, even if that person's not like I hired my dad. And he's not like a full-blown tech. I mean, I taught him a lot of stuff, but he was there for times when, like, I wanted to go out, or if I, like, if I overslept, you know, or I didn't make it in the morning, he was there with the shop open, so he could receive customers, he could take calls. So just even having somebody else, that even if they're not the greatest technician, will ease the load a little bit.
Definitely, yeah, it does, yeah. But for me, we didn't have that advantage. I didn't have that advantage. I had my wife with me, but she couldn't cope with it either. It was just too much. Plus, my shop wasn't just a repair shop. It was an internet cafe, fax, phone booth. It was all in one.
Oh, yeah, you're doing a lot of stuff. It's tough.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so you know, I just didn't have a life. So,
you're just doing full time reballing now.
Oh yeah, now it's full time reballing. Thank God for that. It's a dream job, really. It's get on the morning, do the same thing. It's not boring, never boring, but right now I just it does suit me a lot comparing to what I was doing before. As a repair technician before, I don't like to talk a lot on the phone. I don't like explaining things over and over again.
Right.
Because you know, when I gave up my shop, I then worked for another company, thinking, you know, I worked for Greenwich Communication Center, which is a company in Greenwich, well known, quite good company, has a very good reputation. And I thought, well, if I work in a company as a repair technician, that way I can only do the repair and not have to deal with the customer service and the phones and the explanations and all the responsibility, because all I wanted to do is fix the computer and that's it.
Right.
And the first year was great. I was doing just that. I liked it. And then the second year, you know, when I went into this company, we had like five or six techs in that repair shop or company. It was great. You know, you get to talk with other people who know the same things, you know, all we're all geeks. And then slowly, one by one, those techs started to disappear. One has gone off to another job. The other one has gone back to his country. And then the second year, it was just me repairing all the computers.
Oh, man.
And, you know, the boss liked it. Obviously, she has to pay less wages than before. But I didn't like it. It was just too much work. And then it started the same thing started to happen again, but it was almost like owning my own shop. So that's why I gave up that job. And at the same time, I was training on the reballing thing and it was getting great. So then I gave up the whole job and started on this new project, the reballing.
Right.
But obviously reballing took me about a year to practice. So I needed something to survive on. So I needed to keep doing repairs while training. So I was part-time doing repairs and part-time training on the running business. But what I figured is, rather than owning my own shop, I've done this other way, which is to go to other shops and work on a commission basis. And all they have to do for me is taking the laptop, booking the customer's details, and then I'll go to the shop, fix the computer, and then the customer comes and collects it. And it turned out, I know it sounds quite weird and maybe not, but it turned out quite fine.
You mean this is before you were reballing?
This is, before I was reballing. This is while I was training. I was trying to learn to do the reballing.
While you were learning, you were like freelance, just like the wandering, exactly. The traveling repairman.
Exactly. That's the kind of thing. Now, what I've done is I went to shops that don't do the repairs, of course, don't deal with anything, but are somehow related to computers. And I'm talking about internet cafes. There's a lot of internet cafes around the city in London. Do you have internet cafes around?
Yeah. I don't live downtown, so I don't know how many there are in the city, but... We have internet cafes. It doesn't seem like we have as many as there are in London.
Okay. Well, we have tons of them. And I went to those that are based in high streets, in good areas, and that seemed that they're not doing too well, where you notice the guy in there he's there all day on his desk, probably just checking his emails. So what I've done the first week is go there and use the computers just for internet, just to browse and you know get get the owner of the shop to know me, you know. I didn't just walk in straight away and say, hey, I want to do repair. Yeah, so I went to these cafes, and then what I've done is I went to the guy in the desk and I said simply, I'm a guy who's very good at repairing computers, laptops. I've been doing it for years, and I've seen that you don't do repairs in this shop, and would you like a little more income if we work together? And I said, the way we do this is when the customer, we'll put like banners outside in your shop and logos and everything for computer repairs. And when a customer comes in, you simply tell them, yes, the engineer is not here at the moment, but you can call him right now, or you can leave it for a diagnostics for free, etc. And then we'll give you a quote. And basically we take it from there. And I've given him a book of receipts, which I can had it printed. And I showed him, look, you put the name in there, you put the laptop and brand and what's the problem, and that's it. And I had about two or three shops all within my area, close to each other, so I don't have to go far from one to another. And believe it or not, one of them was a shoe repair shop. So they weren't all internet cafes. And as long as we have the banner there, because the thing with London is you can walk into a pharmacy and you can buy your paracetamol and at the same time get a kilo of tomatoes from the same shop. We have all this thing where all businesses are mixed up in one shop. So it's kind of normal if it sounds strange to you, for you guys.
It does sound strange.
It does. You don't have that in there?
No, we have it. But I mean, it's just odd to mix, like, you know, tomatoes and computers. I mean, to that extent. But, you know, like, we got like giant Walmarts. I don't know if you ever heard of Walmart. It's like a giant store that has like a supermarket and electronics section and all that stuff. But
yeah.
But this is good. Yeah. Hey, this is the way it works. This is a great thing. As many outlets as you can get open to just receive computers for you.
Exactly, especially for guys who are just starting up and they can't afford their own shop, or they don't want the responsibility, or they're working from home and they want the high street customers. That's what you want to get. And you'd be surprised that there wasn't a shop that I didn't walk in and said, oh no, or wait, because they're there the whole day. They will do anything for more money. And for them, they don't have to do a lot of work. All they have to do is fill up the details on a book sheet, and the customer, as long as he knows he's going to a shop and it's there and it's been there for a while, they don't know how it works. They don't know that the customer wouldn't know that you're working with this structure. But it definitely looks like a proper repair shop. And obviously I said I had three. Two of them they give me two rooms in the back of their shops where I've set up my own benches and tools and shelves where I could store them. The other one didn't have enough space. That's the shoe repair shop. So I just go there and pick up the laptop from there, take it home, or take it to the shop and fix it and then bring it back. And that is how it was running. I've done that for about a year. I'm still doing it now.
You're still doing that?
Yeah. I still now and then I do. I don't do the easy ones. Like if someone walks in with the Windows XP installation or Vista or viruses, that I will just have someone else go there and sort it out. But when it's something a bit difficult, like the graphic chipset problem or like a DC socket or motherboard component level work, that I will have to do. But everything else, I've got other people now. Working for me, but this is how I started it. And I think for me, it's better than having my own shop. You get more business because you're sort of based in two or three more locations, and you don't have to pay all those costs. You don't have to see your landlord. You don't have to pay.
It makes you more visible. It's you know who does that now? Like cell phone companies. Like I've seen like a company called Clear do that, and Cricket, or they just go around to different shops and they allow that shop to sell the merchandise, but they don't have their own shop. It's a good idea.
Like everything, like money transfer, like Western Union,
right.
That kind of thing. They just go around shops, say, "Hey, you're probably like an estate agent would have Western Union, because they go there, they give them the tools, and they take commission out of that." Right. And that's how I did Exactly. I saw the same structure. And we work a commission. Some of them, you know, if they are in a really rich area, you give them more because they pay a lot more business rates, a lot more rent. And usually the commission we work is 20 to 35%. Some of them take 20, some 35 out of the labor prices. And they're really happy with it, and I'm happy with it. And you think you're only there when you're needed. You see, you don't have to stay there the whole day to wait for repairs. Right. So when the repair comes, give you a call. I'm so, there.
And you do the repair there. Oh. You do the repair at their shop.
Yes. If they have space, I mean, some of them, they let me, you see, most of them have like a back space or a back office
right. That
you don't use. And they gave me that. And they said, here's yours, put whatever you want. So you repair it there rather than take it home. But some of them might not have the space. Right. So then you would take it home or to whatever your workshop is and fix it there and then return it. And that's how it works. It's over the phone. In the beginning, when it started, the owner of the shop always calls me, says, hey, Lofty, here's a customer for you. He wants to know how much this will cost. And over the phone, they say, yes, oh, you got a virus, no problem. It's going to be £50 and it'll be ready either this afternoon or tomorrow. But because with the experience, 3-4 months down the line, I no longer had to do that. They already knew what the answer is. So right. They were given the estimates. They were dealing with the paperwork. And that's how it is. So it's a good alternative for starters to get to know how the business works, because to set up your own business and start your own shop, it's not going to happen overnight. You don't think that you're going to have customers coming in like by tons and tons. It takes at least 3 years to have your business properly set up and to have a customers coming in at a regular basis.
I don't agree with that.
No, you don't agree?
No, I was doing well with having I was on a pretty popular street. It wasn't crazy popular. But between my sign I had out front and Google AdWords, I had a nice stream right from the beginning. Yeah. Well, that's the way it was for me. I'm just saying, I don't think it would take 3 years. It might take 3 years to get like a real good flow because of word of mouth and whatnot. And just you being established there, but you could still do it. I think you could still do it just by starting.
Yeah. I'm talking about doing really well. Like you get like, I don't know, 5-10 computers a day coming into your job. But
okay.
Because people need to see that you've been there for at least 2 years, 3 years, that then they probably can trust you and
give
you work. But yeah, someone who's like me, who has that personality of me, that you don't want to stay there the whole day, this could be another alternative. I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea, maybe. No. The downside sometimes... Like, I'll give an example, like the other day, a woman called, she says she has a laptop, and she went to the shop, she dropped it in, and then she wanted a quote, and I said to her, okay, she needed a password removal, because her daughter, her friend changed the password, and I said, okay, no problem, I'll do it. She said, oh, someone else quoted me 40, can you do it for 30, and I left it to the last minute. I said, no, I'll stick with my price, but you leave it to the minute where you know the customer isn't going to take your price and he's going to go elsewhere anyway. And then I said, okay, fine, I'll do it for 30. I thought, yeah, this is how you haggle. And then I thought, well, it's an easy job in a way. Take up the hard drive or put it into my system and reboot the password. But when I went to the shop, I've realized that it's one of those laptops that the hard drive can't be extracted. It was a Packard Bell where the hard drive is inside the laptop. And you have to like take apart the whole laptop to get the hard drive off. Now, if I was there and I've seen it, I would have said, I'll stick to my price.
Sure.
But there was another alternative. I think I used one of the CDs from... last time, I think Mitch from the chat room, he showed me this tool you can download and put into a CD, and you can boot from the CD and it will remove the password. I forgot what it was. It's in the forum somewhere.
It might be Offcrack. Is it Offcrack?
I think so. And it just a couple of...
Oh, Conboot.
Conboot. Yeah, that one. Yeah, that one worked great. Just hit enter twice and took all the passwords. So
good.
Yeah. So yeah, in a way, there's a few things, but
I think that that's a great idea to do what you did, especially for somebody that doesn't want to sit in the shop all day. You know, you get to go out, you get to interact, and you don't have to have your own shop, and you don't have to like actually go to people's houses. You're going to businesses. So you could sit exactly. there without the customer like looking over your shoulder. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, that's I think for me it worked really better than a shop. But now it's, you know, business, as I said, it's going great, and I'm looking now. We're gonna get hopefully tomorrow a industrial warehouse unit, like light work, where it's like a huge garage, and we're gonna convert it into.
You need that much room, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
What for?
The thing with reballing is you need space. You just where I work right now for the last 6 months is that not at my workshop, the repair shops, but I was working at my uncle's shop, and it's a motorbike parts shop, and I wanted to work there so I can get away from everyone and I could just have peace and quiet, because he rarely gets customers coming in to buy the motorbike parts because motorbikes are dead now. But there I get peace and quiet, no distractions, because if you're like I'm in the middle of the job and someone walks right past me, that little vibration just from walking can ruin my job.
Really?
I have to start over again. Yeah, like when I'm heating the solder balls to stick to the graphic chipset, and then somebody walks, and then it will sort of vibrate. It's really minimal. You want, but that vibration can make two solder balls bridge together, and then say start all over.
Wow, that's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, even if somebody opens the door, like just the air from the door can ruin my entire job. Can wow. cool the machine, can drop the heat down. So now we need a somewhere where it's like a deserted place, and no one doing just that, and a lot of space. I don't know. I think it's psychologically you need to have space to have a successful job, reballing job done, a lot of space. And so if it's too crowded, if it's a lot of things around, it's just not going to work. Psychologically, it's not going to work.
Well, so, for you, I know people that could work in a dump. I'm not like that. I had to have my desk totally clean, like before every job. I have to have my space. Exactly.
Yeah, you have to have space. This is the three rules about reballing, to have a perfect reballing. First is shower in the morning, and then second is space, where you have a lot of space, and third is protection, where you protect the motherboards, the chip. And that's the only three rules. If you don't,
wait. Okay, let me go over your three rules here. Why not shower? Of course, most people are going to shower, but why is that a rule? Yeah.
It's a rule because you need to start fresh. You need to start your job feeling fresh, and at the end of the day, you don't want to, especially even at night, because you're gonna work a lot with flux, and all that flux is gonna stick to your clothes. You have to change clothes every day,
yeah,
because that flux smell is gonna stick, and your hands are gonna be so sticky from flux. Flux.
What was the third rule, Latvia? I don't think I heard it.
It was shower, space, protect. Protect is protect the motherboards.
Uh-huh.
As you can, so it doesn't blow up or heat up or melt. So
okay.
That's three rules. So now, yeah. So we're looking, and I almost was conned whilst I was looking for workspace.
Conned.
I had this guy. Yeah, conned like.
No, I know what you mean, but like how so?
Yeah, it was strange, but there was this. I was looking for cheap places, basically, and
right.
Normally places you don't go to estate agents. You go on a website called Gumtree, which is the equivalent of what you guys have as Craigslist.
Okay.
It's the same thing, just different names. And there was this advert says, "Oh, cheap workspace," and no pictures, nothing at all, just cheap workspace. And it was very close to where I live in Canary Wharf, in Elephant and Castle. So okay, I emailed the guy. The guy replied, said, yeah, come down and see it tomorrow. I went there the next day. The space was great, but it was a total mess. Like, it needed a whole rework. Like, the floor needed doing, the ceiling. But because it was so cheap, it was incredibly cheap, but it's still worth to rebuild the whole thing and work in it. And I said, okay, fine, I'll give you an answer by tomorrow. The next day, I gave him an answer. I said, yeah, fine, let's meet. I want to take this place. I want to start working at ASAP. The guy said, before you called, someone else came and was interested and paid a deposit on this workspace. And he wanted me to pay £100 deposit as well. And then his boss is going to decide if he will give the place to me or to him. And if in case his boss decides to give the place to the other guy, he will refund me the money straight away. All right. And then I said, I kind of believed him. I was almost going to do that. And then at night, I did some research about this agency or this guy. And their website had absolutely no postal address or registered address, which is illegal in the UK. If you have a website running or business, you have to put your address. And he wanted the money first, and then he wanted three months in advance, paid first, before he can give me the keys. So it sounded very dodgy. So then I said, no, probably. Yeah. So now I'm going to take, on the other hand, I'm going to get my workspace with this giant company that owns a lot of warehouses around the country. It's cheaper that way because it's in a deserted area. It's a huge space, and I don't get to pay like business rates because I'm not in a high street area. I'm just like an office,
right?
So it saves a lot of costs, and obviously the extra space would be great.
So you're happy with the space?
Yeah, totally. I was a little disappointed of how their pricing system goes, because they give you a price, said, okay, 250 a month. I said, wow, great. And then, okay, £1,000 for service charge fees. Okay, fine.
What?
And then
200, what's that, service charge?
They add it on top. They said, I think it's to do with the CCTV security and the guard security and having your own manager on site. So it's just, and then they added another £500 admin fee.
What?
Administration fee to do the, just to do, I don't know, to write up the contract, I think.
Wow. It's a lot of lawyers. Money.
Yeah. The charges that they added on top, and then you have to pay, get building insurance, contents insurance, and then electric and water, and then business rates. But then I said, okay, I do with my business rates because I know I don't have to pay them. But they give you a little price, and then it's just they add all of that on top, hidden charges. But it's still okay. I'd rather get it from a company rather than from someone private, and because I'm gonna be there for a long time.
Right.
Actually, because these graphic chipsets are made the way they are right now.
Right.
If they improve soon. hopefully, I'll probably be there for at least 3 or 4 years.
Good.
So if you get it from a private guy, then, you know, they could turn against you at any time. They see you doing well, they might increase the price.
Right.
You know, but getting it from a company probably is much more trustworthy and wouldn't have so much.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's big. And yeah, so that way I could, you know, we could work faster, repair faster. Probably soon I'm going to decide to stop reballing the whole entire laptops because they're just wasting a lot of our time having to take them apart. And we're just going to do just motherboards, dealing with only repair shops around the country, repair techs around the country.
You mean that you're not going to take any laptops apart there? You have to send. They have to send you the motherboard pre.
Yeah. It's way easier. I mean, I noticed when they send just the motherboards, I most of them get reballed the same day and shipped the next day.
Wow.
When people are sending the entire laptops, it takes 3-4 days, sometimes even more, just for the taking them apart and putting them back together. And we have loads of work at the moment. But as soon as we're going to build up...
How are you going to swing that? You're just going to tell repair shops, you just got to keep send me the motherboard and that's it?
Just the motherboard, yeah, that's it. That's how it's going
to
work.
Do most of the repair shops that you work with, do they know how to get the motherboard out?
Oh yeah. A lot of them. We do get motherboards from the consumers themselves, from people themselves who probably never took motherboards out. And I've made a video on YouTube on how to take a motherboard out completely, step by step, like a kid's tutorial.
Good.
They followed that, but then I said to them, "Hey, it's easy to take it out, but to put it back together,
that's always the toughest part."
That's the toughest part. You gotta really note down how you took it apart.
Right.
But it's they chose that way. They don't want to pay the extra. They wanted the cheaper way. But as I said, people do send the motherboards out. But yeah, we just want to work really with techs. That way, it's easier, quicker, and much better for us and them as well. And then they can make a little profit out of it as well. That's how the business gonna run.
Good.
Yeah. That's to do with reballing. Other than that, I wanted to give the people some advice, because our business basically is all to do with the famous graphic chipset failures, and not Southbridge chipset failures, and all are because of overheatings.
Yeah, if anybody doesn't know what reballing is, we probably should have mentioned this at the beginning, because, you know, Lafayette has been on a couple shows. You should know by now. You can either go back and listen to the earlier Pod Nuts with Lafayette, or just, why don't you just tell us again real quick, Lafayette, what reballing is for those who don't know.
Yeah, reballing is basically when a laptop has a problem with the graphic chipset or the Southbridge chipset on your motherboard. What we do is we take off the graphic chipset and replace the solder underneath it, the solder connections that connects the graphic chipset and the motherboard, because the solder is the problem. It cracks, it doesn't make a very good connection between the chipset and the motherboard, and we replace that solder entirely, but not with the same type. We change it with lead solder, because what he was using before from the manufacturer is lead free, and with lead it's much stronger.
And people who have been reflowing these chips thinking that they're fixing them, you're saying because they're using the same solder, it's probably going to happen again?
Yeah. Basically, people who are reflowing, reflow, there's a difference between reflow repair and reballing repair. The reflow repair is only heating up the chip or heating up the solder to melting point, so it would join again with the motherboard. But that only has and always has a very short lifetime, because reflowing, you're only burning the flux inside the solder, because the solder does contain flux. And the more you heat up, the more you do it, the more you evaporate the flux inside the solder, and the solder is going to be weak and it cracks and it causes a connection problem, which leads to either your laptop powering on with a black screen, powering on with vertical stripes on your screen, or you get colored boxes, or it freezes while watching a video, or you get a blue screen error while you watch a video.
Right.
And reballing repair is extremely rare. I barely know any other companies who do it for real. Some companies do say they do reballing, but be careful. Make sure they provide you with evidence, pictures of that they've done, that the chip is out of the motherboard and the solder has been changed. Make sure they give you more than 3 months guarantee, because reflow lasts 1 to 3 months. Make sure they, all just come to us, really. But most, I would say 80% of repair techs, it's not probably, that's the only thing they know is to reflow. I don't blame them, but.
Well, it's easy. I mean, it's not terribly easy. You just get out a heat gun and just do it.
That's it. Or even a hairdryer. You can even do it with a hairdryer long enough, it will still work. But a very short amount. And people, techs and repair shops who are doing reflow as a repair and charging, they just ruin their reputation.
Right.
That's basically a sum up. And if you have a laptop, or if you're a tech and a customer brought you a laptop for repairs. Now, even any other repair, if a customer brought you a laptop, says, "Oh, just nuke and pave, just format it," I would highly recommend you explain to them that, or ask them, how long have you owned the laptop for? Has the laptop been serviced recently? Because most likely they've owned the laptop for more than a year or from new, and the dust inside hasn't been cleaned up. And an air can usually doesn't do the job. I don't believe the air can get all the dust out. The best way to get the dust out of the heatsink is to take the heatsink off the laptop, take apart the heatsink itself, the fan off the heatsink, and then remove the dust from there with a brush, because the air can will, the air will go blow, they'll blow it from the outside. It will blow the dust, but the main dust will still be inside. It can't get out.
You can.
So our customer,
you can. I mean, it's dangerous. Yeah. I know what you're saying, but it's dangerous to do with the air can, because most of the dust sits on the very inside of that heat sink and it makes a little wall of dust. Yeah. So when you hit it with the air can, it just blows the dust into the blades of the fan. Yeah. But if you know that you're doing that, I see that that's happening, and I don't feel like taking the whole laptop apart, I'll take like a wet dry vac, and I'll put the hose right up against the bottom vent of the laptop and suck those chunks out as best I could through those little holes. And if you rotate the vacuum enough, it actually will pull it out, but you gotta make sure you get everything. You don't want those dust balls to sit in the fan blades. I've talked about this before, and I still do recommend, like, as a general procedure, the first thing I do when I take a laptop in is I blow out all the dust with an air can. But obviously the best way to do it is to take the laptop apart, but you're going to, I don't know about doing that every time.
To be honest, in a way, if you want to have a really a good service, you're going to have to do the taking apart if you're good at taking apart customers, because you know what? We've realized now that it's not just the dust that's causing the graphic failure or the motherboard failure. It's mainly the thermal paste.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a different story.
Yeah. The thermal paste that the manufacturer puts on the processor dries. And when it dries up, it lifts the heatsink away from the processor's top, and that overheats the processor. And when the processor gets hotter, the graphic chip or the SATA grids get even hotter, because the processor takes most of the air, because most of the motherboards, they have the processor near the fan. They give less cooling to the graphic chip and more cooling to the changing the grease, the dry one, is very important. You gotta get that bottle Akasa, which removes the old grease, thermal grease, and replace it. And if you explain this to the customer, if you say to them, mostly I explain it and the customer agrees, I say, listen, I'll fix the virus, but I can already see dust from the outside of the computer, and if you use it more, a couple of months or more, it could cause that famous graphic chip problem. So if we take out the dust from the inside and change the dry thermal paste with a fresh new one.
Now, what do you use for thermal paste? What brand?
I use MX2.
Okay.
Mainly because I can get large quantities, like 100 gram, is it, or 200 gram, large quantities to arrange. And it's basically the same. I know everybody talks about
Arctic Silver.
Arctic Silver.
Yeah,
it's the same as Arctic Silver. I use MX2, and it's working great. It doesn't really matter. I mean, don't get those really cheap white one that is almost like milk coming out of that syringe from China. It's cheap. No, just get something that is branded, Akasa. But, you know, it's a good practice every year or so to change the thermal paste, because it's going to dry.
It's a good practice. Take your laptop apart every year and change the thermal paste.
Yeah, same thing goes for PCs and even graphics cards for PCs. You know, the same thing. They have the exact same thing. They have a thermal grease in there. And on a PC, if you have especially a gaming card or a good graphics card, right, for my gaming one, when the warranty ends, take the heating off, change the remove the old one, put the new thermal paste.
Yeah,
and it gets cool and gives it extra life.
It does definitely. Yeah. And the fans suck on graphics cards. They're the worst fans made.
I always buy aftermarket ones for my graphics cards. Before, but now the good thing is now manufacturers are making those aftermarket types for the graphics cards. Like before, when I had my 8800 NVIDIA GT, I bought the a custom made fan for it by it's called Thermaltake, I think, and it's basically two quiet fans, and it's a universal cooler just for NVIDIA. I think it works on a lot of graphics cards, and it's great. It dropped the noise like half the noise I was getting from the manufacturer one, and the cooling is way better than the manufacturer's one. But next time when I bought the newer generation one, now I have the ATI 4890. I bought the one already with a custom fan on it. It was made by Gigabyte. And the thing about custom fans is you can't control the speed. They always run on one steady speed, but you'll find them overall, they have a lower noise and much, much better cooling. That's doing well.
As
I was saying about the text, so give them that advice, tell them that you need to do that and charge a bit more. Charge what, $20 more, $30 more, because you know it's an extra work you have to do, and for them, wow, it's going to get me more life. Usually, a lot of customers, when you explain this to them, they will say, okay, fine, do it, because it's important.
If the price is right, they'll do it.
Yeah, if price is right. Yeah, you don't have to do it for free, but right, just it will give you a little extra.
Now you're saying add this on to what? Like, what kind of repair would you add this on to? Not just virus removal or anything, right?
Yeah. Anything.
Well, then not do it. I don't know how the currency transform relates to there and here, but $30.
What I'm saying is, if a customer brings a laptop for entirely, even for changing a screen, and you notice the warranty expired, and the customer has never had it cleaned,
right,
or has never had the dust cleaned for more than a year, you propose this to them, because if the customer hasn't cleaned his laptop from dust over a year, if the thermal paste hasn't, or a year or two, a thermal paste is dry and hasn't been changed, and you notice the fan noise is really loud all the time, because laptops, the fan, I'm talking about laptops here, because this is what mostly we repair here. 5% is laptops, and the Brits here, rarely people own desktops here. It's, especially London, it's more of a laptop.
But that's I agree with you. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, though. So I would say definitely do it. Of course, that's a great service to offer. But don't undersell yourself, because it's. To put thermal grease on the processor, you normally have to take the whole thing apart. I mean, a lot of laptops now actually are coming with that plate on the bottom, where you could take that out and you could access the processor.
That's great. Yeah, this is the pain, you know. But if you're already fixing laptops, then it is a pain. I do agree. Maybe if you see a laptop that's got a bottom panel where you can take the bottom panel, usually it's the heating comes right off.
Right, with the bottom panel, yeah.
Yeah, but those laptops like HP series and Sony, you have to take the whole bottom off.
Right.
And those are quite difficult.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Don't charge too little if you're going to do that job. But you know what? You know what else? Here's another little tip, kind of disrelated. You can get like a laptop. I've done this before. You get a laptop at like Best Buy or something, and it's really cheap because it has a Celeron processor or a really low-end processor in it. And you could just go on eBay, buy like a Core 2 Duo and just replace the processor. And you know what I mean? For like maybe $100. And for like, you buy the laptop for $300, for $400, you know, or for an extra $100, I mean, you throw that processor in, and then for $400, you got like a kick butt laptop. So I would also consider, like, if you can't access the processor easily, look for cheap laptops in the stores. I mean, sometimes the only thing that's different between a lower end and high end is just the processor. So you just replace the processor yourself. A lot of people sell used processors on eBay. So that's just a little quick tip.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. The upgrades. I know, but you can't upgrade much these days on a laptop. But yeah, definitely.
If the processor is removable,
The bottom panel laptop, even when you buy a laptop, I think one of the good tips to look at is, oh, you like a laptop, look at the bottom of it. Does it have a bottom panel? And if it has, then it's a great feature. You could do it yourself. You can upgrade the memory yourself, upgrade the processor yourself, and most important, clean it up yourself and change the thermal grease yourself.
Right.
So laptops that have a bottom panel are, for me, a good option, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And don't get the wrong idea about the Mac, the new Macs that have no bottom panel, because basically the whole bottom is the panel. You get that off, you could access everything. Yeah. So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So signs of when your GPU is on its last leg. So it's 1 year or over, the fan noise is running fast regularly all the time, not like before where it's quiet for about half an hour, then it kicks in. The bottom of your laptop gets hotter and hotter, much hotter than when you bought it brand new or the first 2 or 3 months. The laptop then starts to shut down without any notice, or freezes while you're watching a video on YouTube or on a watching a high definition video or a DVD or playing games.
Right.
Or while playing games or doing something video related, you get a black screen error. You might think it could be a software error, Windows related error, or it's most likely a graphic chip error, a problem. If you don't, by this point, if you don't clean the dust and change the thermal paste, then you start getting vertical stripes. Or sometimes your laptop, you switch it on in the morning and then you get the black screen. It powers on, the lights are on, and then black screen. And then you switch it off again, on again, and it comes back on. Sometimes it will do it more and more. That means your GPU is on last legs. And then it will just do that on
Do you mean the GPU itself is going bad or just needs to be reballed?
Just needs to be reballed. Yeah, the GPU's connection between the GPU and the motherboard, the solder connection, because it cracked, and then it will just be dead, just powers on, lights on, black screen, not just totally pitch black screen. You get the lights, the bulb on the screen to light up, but nothing, no writing, no BIOS coming up. You also try and hook up an external monitor into the VGA port, and the same thing happens there, nothing on the screen.
Right.
And that means, that's the time when it would need reballing and not reflow. Okay. Yeah. For the reballing, so I wanted to also give some of the tools I use when I'm doing computer repairs and laptop repairs.
Sure.
When installing drivers, and you know when you get to that driver that you can't find anywhere or download anywhere, or especially if it's a desktop PC and the manufacturer somehow gone bankrupt and it no longer exists and you can't access the website to get download, then you need to find the driver manually by doing a Google search. And what I do, I use this tool called, you can use, of course, those driver automatic driver installations that will look for the driver, but this is when it gets to the point where you can't get the driver at all,
right,
and you need to look for it manually. I use a software called Everest. Have you heard about it?
Yeah, Everest was mainly popular for just diagnosing, but telling you all the hardware that you actually have in your system.
Yeah, it will just tell you basically the hardware you've got on your computer, what type of graphic card you have, what type of LAN card you have, sound device you have, and then you could get the details from there, and it will help you basically search faster for your driver that you want. I use SpeedFan, which is I highly recommend for everyone to
SpeedFan.
Check that. Yeah, SpeedFan. If you Google SpeedFan, you'll get the it's a temperature monitor software which can be installed on any computer, any laptop, netbook, and it will give you the temperatures for your processor, for your graphic card, and for your hard drive.
Do you actually use it to adjust the speed of your fan, or you just do it as just to see what as a monitor?
I haven't tried that. I don't think that works. It would just monitor. It's a simple.
No, it does work. That's what it was created for.
It was. It hasn't worked. I've tried that.
It doesn't work on every motherboard. It has to have the right. It doesn't work on every motherboard, but I did get it to work for a couple customers who have like a really loud, high spinning fan on their processor that just goes at one speed the whole time.
Yeah,
it's a cool little tool for that.
Yeah, it's a cool little thing. And stuff. Last time we talked about wireless anti-static straps from eBay, and I thought it'd be I could give another one. I've got. Something else I got off eBay recently, LCD PSU tester. They used to have power supply testers, but now they came up with the LCD version where you could actually see the voltage on a little LCD monitor. Huh. And it's a good, cool little thing. It saves me having to take a power supply from another PC and test it on a... Because you get a dead computer PC... And you want to check if it's the processor, if it's the motherboard.
Right, right.
And this little thing just hooks up into your power supply straight away, either 20-pin or 24-pin. And the power, the mains goes to the power supply, and then it will switch on straight away. If the power supply is working, it will power on and hear the fan. Right. And you can see the voltage the 12 volt on the LCD monitor. You can also check the 12 volt one, the one that goes into the motherboard. The four pin one, because sometimes you get a motherboard that will power on and shows nothing on the display, and usually you hook that up to 4-pin and then the display comes up, because that 4-pin gives power to graphic and USB and etc.
Yeah.
And it will also hook up and check that, so you can determine if it's the motherboard or if it's the power supply. Great cheap little thing. I think it costs about $20. From China, I got it. Good, works every time, no problem with it. What not to get from eBay is those laptop chargers, those universal cheap laptop chargers. I hate those.
Why? They just because they die so fast.
But not only that, I had like at least four or five occasions where they actually killed the laptops.
No way.
Yeah. These customers. Sometimes I had customers before, and they came in for a DC socket changed the socket. Then I told them, "Oh, your charger is also dead. Can you want me to order you one?" And me, I order the genuine one. I buy them from eBay, but buy the genuine one, the brand new.
That's a good idea. I guess with the cheap one, first of all, they're so light, so they're not really built that well. And I guess the voltage is not regulated enough; it just spikes. But you know what I do? I replace the tips. I've many a power adapter. I just cut off the old tip and put a new one on.
Yeah, I do that as well. Yeah, but their chargers were like totally dead. It wasn't the.
Okay. The charger's dead. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. So the customer says, no. I'll get it. I'll order it. That's fine, because then I know they're gonna buy those cheap ones, because I offer my price. Obviously, it's more. It's £30. It's buying genuine. Oh no, I'll get one.
Right.
And they go buy the £10 or £7 one from eBay.
Right.
And then a month later they come back, it's dead.
I said,
all right, can you bring me the charger? And then they bring the charger, see this laptop replacement, how huge the font is on that. And it's so cheap. And I say, well, that's your problem. It's all the voltage regulators on the motherboard all blown up, because it probably gave it 200 volts or something.
That's a great tip, to use the word genuine whenever you do a search for that and laptop batteries.
Because maybe they weren't aware, because those sellers.
They make it seem like you're getting an HP.
They will have word placement in there. So look for genuine, look at the picture if it matches exactly. Yeah, you got to find a genuine one. Like yesterday, I lost my Dell genuine charger. And then my uncle, he passed me his, he had one of those Chinese ones. And they made them look exactly the same as Dell.
Yep.
But the sticker, obviously, but I really needed to use it to check my email. Hooked it up into my Dell. It worked. It does power on, but it doesn't charge the battery.
Yeah, Dells don't like the cheap ones. Because they have that middle pin, and that thing just messes everything up.
So, you know, imagine you order one for Dell and customer, it takes a few days to arrive. So really get genuine, nothing better than genuine. The universal ones, I used to buy them. I just wanted to try and see how they are. And they're so cheap. They actually give the wrong voltage. They have that dial thing to change, but it's crappy. It doesn't.
Well, that's the real cheap one. I've had success with an iGo. I actually bought an iGo charger.
A branded charger. I'm talking about Chinese non-branded, those cheap ones.
Okay, but then you went off to the multi or the universal. You're talking about the Chinese universal ones as well, huh?
Yeah, I'm talking about the eBay Chinese from Hong Kong, cheap, like $10, $15 one. Yeah. And you can tell it's cheap. It's so light. The power lead doesn't go through all the way, and it spikes all the time.
Yeah.
And they just try and stay away from those.
Good one.
Also, okay. I've been doing this for drivers for years, and I think I don't know. I'm not sure whether we talked about it, but it's a collection of 100,000 drivers that I got from Torrens, and it's not for those who are too fanatic about the latest drivers. But this thing is great for laptops because most laptop manufacturers don't update the drivers. They give you one driver and they stick with it.
Right.
Except Dell, sometimes they give you updated versions for their video ones. But most, like Sony, only gives one batch and this stays the same for years and years. So if you're a tech and you don't want to hunt for drivers and go to the website and download it, or if you're on an on-site job and you don't have internet to download the drivers, you could use this folder, which you can get off Torrents, called 100,000 collection of 100,000 drivers, Windows drivers for Vista and XP. And it's basically, it's a non-executable drivers. It's a collection of just the main files of the drivers. And the way you do it is you go to you save the file into your external hard drive or USB stick, and you go to the device manager and point where you find the question mark, point it to this folder.
Yeah.
It will scan the entire folder, and when it finds the driver, it will automatically load up the files and it will install the driver.
Wow.
At least it will get you, for example, like it will get you the Ethernet driver, so you can connect to the internet to get the drivers. I find it for me, for Windows XP, 80% of the time it will find all the drivers, install them. Because Vista, I usually do the online automatic download. But it's a good collection to have on your external hard drive, just in case.
That sounds good. You know, there's some people in the chat room saying also that Lalo has, in the PodNuts forums, Lalo has put together a disk of of drivers too. So check that out too.
Yeah, but these are a non-executive, so you don't have to go to EXE. You just can the device manager.
Okay.
Because this guy, he basically extracted them, so he clicked on every setup and got those files. So
that's great.
It took a lot of time to get that, so it wouldn't work if it was EXE.
Gotcha.
For me, it's that's why. I think this is my tools, my main tools. Everything else I know you guys talked about. You know, I was struggling so hard to find subjects. I mean, I almost was going to talk about KFC and Burger King today because there's just, you guys talked about everything.
Wow, now you're making me hungry, actually. Don't worry about it. Like I said before, I think I said it in the last show, repetition is fine because... Heck, the more you're something's drilled into your head, the more you're going to remember it. Also, people tune into different episodes. Not everybody sits down and watches listens to every episode of PodNuts Daily. So definitely, the more we repeat things, I think it's fine. No sweat. And the information you gave us today was great. So let me read the want me to read the emails now?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
All right. Nick sent me an email. Here we go. Actually, this is Jim. He says, Steve, I have my laptop apart down to the motherboard, and I cannot get it removed. I'm working on... Let me see if this is the right email. Yes. I'm working on a Toshiba Satellite A70-75. The board is bigger than the ones in your videos, and it's connected to the bottom section of the laptop where the battery compartment is, not the top section where the touchpad keyboard is. I have one side loose and pulled up, but I cannot get it to turn loose from the back side where all the connections are. Well, let me see this. Whenever there's a problem like this on a laptop and it just won't come out, there's a screw somewhere there's always a screw somewhere. And it might not be easy to find, but it's there. So all you gotta do is keep flipping the laptop over, check it, and then flip it over again and check it. And that screw will present itself, but never ever force anything. That's the first rule of laptops. If it feels like you have to force something, you're probably going to break it. Find the screw that's holding it in, and you'll be able to get that done.
Yeah. The way I do it to find that screw somewhere is I will go to the area where it's really tight and gently pull the motherboard away from the plastic, and there'll be a point somewhere, and there where you will lead you to that screw. It could be also, you know, the VGA port, sometimes it has those, what do you call them? You know, those two screws on the sides?
Yeah, those hex screws. I can't remember the exact name, but they're like hex screws.
Sometimes it's that where the battery is, he said.
Yeah, that's right. Those screws, definitely, they are like that. But like, like you said, it's perfect. Once you bend the motherboard out a little bit, you'll see where the bend is tightly. You'll see the part where it's not coming apart from the plastic. And that's where you want to zero in on.
Yeah.
All right, next one. This is from Mark. He says, here's a beta that will be of a lot of interest to a lot of listeners on your show. This is a new Microsoft type of program. Microsoft.com, well, it's called Windows Intune. So if you do a Google search for Windows, Intune, I actually haven't checked this out too much yet. It says, Windows Intune simplifies how businesses manage and secure PCs using Windows Cloud Services and Windows 7. So your computers and users can operate at peak performance from virtually anywhere. Windows Intune is a comprehensive solution that includes PC management, malware protection, Windows upgrades, and more. This looks pretty interesting. So, and you can try the beta. Check it out. Experience Windows Intune today. Have you checked that out, Latvi?
You know, I personally don't believe these applications and things that can boost your computer. And the way I do it is go to the MS config, disable startup programs, and then go to the especially Vista. You go to right click on my computer, go to properties, and then go to disable the. You know how the graphics are? There's let Windows manage automatically, and then I choose the last one where it says disable all the graphic options, and then leave just the two last boxes and check them, which will keep the way Vista looks, but disables like shades and fades. I really don't believe in those. I don't know. I've never tried them. These applications that will boost your computer somehow, but I just
I know what you're saying. I never buy those like registry booster programs or whatever, but this is some kind of Microsoft program that does. It works from the cloud. Allows you to. Actually, I don't know everything that it does, but I don't think it's just as cut and dry as like speed up your computer 500%. One of those crappy programs, but I don't know. It's worth checking out. You guys, let me know what you guys think about it. Microsoft. It takes them a couple tries. They usually get something right after they have a couple different versions of something that comes out, but we'll see how they do with that. It might be a flop. This is from Kevin. He says, hey, Steve, here's another Comcast fail. Let me just read this. I love ripping on Comcast. This is from The Consumerist. Consumerist.com is actually a cool site that you guys turned me on to. Comcast refused to believe my father is dead, is the title of this article. The death of a family member is never easy to handle. And the last thing you need in the wake of a tragic loss is to get caught up in red tape and incompetence over something as minor as canceling your late loved one's Comcast account. Unfortunately for consumerist reader Wyatt, that's exactly what's happening to him and his family right now. Wyatt's father passed away in February, and all of the hassles involving closing out the estate... Wyatt's father passed away in February, and of all the hassles involved in closing out the estate, Wyatt says his dealings with Comcast have been the worst of the lost. He says, Wyatt writes, the story starts back in early March after the funeral and all the immediate issues that have been taken care of. My family and I began identifying services that could be cut right away, cable and television being at the top of the list. I called Comcast, who assured me that the service could be canceled as soon as I faxed over a death certificate. I sent one over, problem solved, except the bills kept arriving. I called again. This time it's a mix-up, they said. The service will be canceled shortly. Another bill arrives. I call again, and they insist they need their equipment back before anything can be done. None of the other representatives mentioned that before, but okay, they need their equipment back. Makes sense. I have relatives visit the house and deliver the boxes to a local retail center. I'm 8 hours away at school, so I can't do it myself. Predictably, another bill arrives. No cancellation of service. Instead, we've got a bill for continued service of $580 and change. After another angrier call, I'm told they need the death certificate again. I fax the certificate again, and my reward? An updated bill in late July where the service is finally canceled and backdated 49 days to the middle of June. Comcast still insists the estate owes $370 despite nearly all of that bill being for services they were told to stop providing for a dead man. Once again, I called Comcast. This time I was told there's nothing they could tell me because I wasn't the owner of the account. They insisted I would need to fax the death certificate over to them a third time or take it into a local service center, the nearest one for me being 50 miles away, before they could even discuss the account with me. So even though, and that's all Wyatt has to say, and this consumer says, so even though Wyatt has made countless calls on behalf of his late father and sent multiple copies of his death certificate, Comcast now insists they can't talk to him because he's not the deceased. Sounds like Comcast has kickstarted their campaign to win the next worst company in America tournament.
Oh man. Oh jeez, I don't know. I think with call centers and all, I think I would have done it in writing, because that's the way it counts, is to write to them in letters so you can have proof. So in case you take it to court or anything, you have proof in writing.
Yeah, proof. Or maybe do a live chat as well.
Yeah, because these call centers, you just gotta think they agents next to computers. They see you as a number, and you know, they can put notes. Oh, deceased, something like that. But how many notes they can put in, and whether the next guy is gonna understand what the other guy talked right. about? Because all they're gonna do is bounce you from one department to another.
Right.
And I don't know what to say about that.
Somebody sent me an email saying, I don't know why I didn't mark it to read on the show, but he says that when he ever has a problem like that, he just immediately contacts the state's attorney general office and files a complaint, and he gets immediate response, and the company always handles the heck out of it because they don't want a bad mark on their record. But I'll tell you what I do. Instead of doing it in writing, like you say, because that takes too long for me, I'm not going to put anything in envelope and put a stamp on it. To me, that's just like, it's almost insanity now to do something like that. With the internet and email and all the technology we have, whenever somebody asks me to mail them something, I just want to punch them. But what I do is I call up the service or the company. The first thing I say as soon as I get a person is I tell them, I go, just so you know, this call is being recorded for quality assurance, and I tape the call. So plus Comcast, those guys all give you their like ID number before they start talking. So if you have this recorded, I think that, and you tell them you're recording it, I think that's admissible as evidence. So.
Yeah, and navigate your way to the right department, because I think the first guy who answers with you is the guy who would send you to the other department, and then the other guy. So you got to find the right guy. And sometimes what I've noticed with these call centers is when it gets a little bit complicated for that guy, although it's his department and he can sort it out, but when he can't understand, he would find any reason to send you someone else. He will say, you might need transfer. And they say, no, I don't want to transfer. I want to cancel. I want to do that.
Right.
I don't know. Me, usually when it gets too hectic, I just call my bank, cancel the direct debit. That's it. They can't take any more money, and they can do whatever they want. Because it just, you're hours and hours on the telephone.
Yeah, he probably should have called a bank or something. That got kind of crazy. Another thing I do is I immediately ask for a supervisor. But I'll tell you what, too, also, because I have experience with this, and I call now and I usually get what I want because I've done it so many times, you get used to it. But you could ask for a supervisor immediately, or just know when somebody on the other end of the line tells you that they cannot possibly do something, like you want them to do something, and they tell you, sir, there's no way I can do that. It's not possible. Just never believe them when they say that, because I could count so many times where I've tried to get something and they say, sir, there's no way I can do that. The computer says it's this way and I just can't change it. I usually get my way because once you get transferred to the supervisor, oh yeah, I could change that for you. So never believe what they say when they say something can't be done. Just keep persisting and you can usually get what you want.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to be it for this show. Latvia, anything you want to say or plug before we end off?
Yeah, for those interested in reballing, I've set up a Twitter account. It's not probably that great. I'm just trying to get used to it, and I've got a Twitter website or Twitter page, and it's twitter.com/laptop reballing, reballing with double L's. If you go there, I post now, I think, as on a regular basis, different motherboards we are reballing. I've got Sony's there, got HP's there, Acer's, all kinds of how it's in pictures. We're going to put galleries of pictures from start to finish in sort of detailed way. So you can see how your repair is going to be dealt with. So check that out if you want.
Awesome.
Other than that, if you're interested in reballing or you need reballing, just go to our new website now called laptopreballing.co.uk. You can buy straight away through PayPal and contact us through that way.
There you have it. Awesome, man. Well, thanks again for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, that's going to be it for today's episode. See you all next time. Music for Podnuts Daily has been provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/EvanKing.